You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Rachel Klepa. Rachel, thanks so much for talking with me today.
Thank you for having me.
Rachel, tell me what you're doing now so we can get to know you, or the listeners can get to know you.
What am I doing? Well, I am based out of Pittsburgh, and I work at the Office of Public Arts, and I'm the manager of community engagement. So part of my time is based here at the Office of Public Art, and then working on my own art historical projects.
Okay, so let's talk about both. I definitely want to talk about what you're doing, of course, in terms of public engagement, but let me ask you about your own art historical projects. What does that mean? What are you working on?
Right now, there's a project that I've been working on for a long time, probably almost 10 years now, and one of my areas of expertise are New Deal murals, or murals found in post offices. And there are two murals in particular that I've been looking at all this time at the Gannett, Pennsylvania post office, which is about, I would say, maybe around 40 miles from downtown Pittsburgh. And they were commissioned in the 1930s during the Great Depression when that project was going. And, you know, through my research, I've been able to reattribute those murals because prior research showed that it was by a local artist named Robert Lepper, but I have found through my research that the design was by another artist named Alexander J. Costello, who was part of sort of establishing the first industrial design program in the United States at Carnegie Tech, which is now Carnegie Mellon University. And he also worked on the industrial design program at Pratt in New York. So it's been a really interesting process going into those murals and just all the different connections that it's made for me through my research and meeting people and talking with people.
That's so cool. You know, I'd like to talk more about that because
sure.
I know that I don't remember seeing, you know, many in New York City, but I'm often in New Haven, and there's a post office in New Haven that has a mural in it.
Mm-hmm.
And every time I go in there, I'm stunned, you know, by
sure.
By its beauty, that it's there, that it's in this dumpy post office, really,
yeah.
You know, this little brick building. And there's this mural on the wall that's in this case about, you know, the founding of New Haven. You know, it's a great
mm-hmm.
historical image.
Mm-hmm.
How many of these were made? I mean, in your research, I don't know much about, I know that the New Deal seems like something that's almost kind of hard to believe. It was such a wonderful project, or that's how I see it, with activating
mm-hmm.
all these artists all over the United States. But were
right.
post offices a place where there was an unusual amount of mural activity?
Well, there was one department in particular, the Treasury Section of Fine Arts of Painting and Sculpture, sometimes just referred to as the section. And that specific department was in charge of commissioning murals for post offices and courthouses, basically federal buildings. So it would be a national call that was usually organized by local panelists, sometimes local, sometimes regional. It really depends. Each mural I could really argue that each mural probably has its own unique story and can't really be summarized in a way. And these panels would do the call for artists, and artists would apply. And it gave an opportunity for people to apply to all of these different jobs. And I would say that there's probably around 1,500, if I'm not mistaken. That's a rough number, but there was a substantial amount of these murals commissioned. And I think for me, based on, you know, what you just said, is that, you know, how can people kind of revisit these murals in a way that can be used as learning tools for today, kind of as a springboard for discussion about, you know, what public art is, what do these murals mean to people now, how can we make them relevant? And I've been thinking about that a lot because I gave a tour through my office here, through our office at the Gannett Post Office, and I gave a talk there, and the one mailman who was from Gannett, born and raised, he couldn't stay for the talk, and he said to me, I've lived in this town my whole life, and I've been enthralled by these murals, and I never knew what they meant or what they were about. And he said, I'm sorry I can't stay for this talk. And I think about that all the time because I know so much about them because of my research and because of what I do, but then I think of the people in these towns that look at them but then don't really know. So I'm always thinking, how can we bridge that gap? And I think that it's amazing that so many of them still exist. And I think that they are really an important piece of public art history in the United States.
Absolutely. Yeah, they're an extraordinary piece of history. And are they protected at all? I mean, when I see the mural that I'm thinking of now in the local post office, seems very much unprotected. It looks like it could be very easily damaged. There's dirt on it. It's like it might as well be wallpaper on the wall. I mean, it's so exposed and so vulnerable. And yet, you know, in the case that I'm just talking of, it's gorgeous and has enormous historical significance for New Haven. If I haven't done much research into it, but I know that it's depicting three judges. I know those judges were, major roads were named after them.
Sure.
Parks were named after them.
Mm-hmm.
All kinds of paths. These were really significant figures in the founding. But very little of that is known. So, I mean, aside from, right, there should be pamphlets or something there telling us more about these murals, but are they not protected at all? Could they easily be painted over?
Oh, yeah, and that's a topic. That is something that I've just started to look into more, you know, about how do we raise awareness and how do we protect these murals. And there are some organizations out there that look at this in depth because some have disappeared, some have been removed, some are missing. I know the one post, another post office near Pittsburgh, when I was first looking at these works, the postmaster told me that there was a person who came in and offered him $30,000 for this relief by Mildred Jerome, and he almost considered it. I mean, not that I think he would have, but there was sort of this disconnect even with the workers about what the works were. And I think for some, they might not even realize these works are property of the United States, so you can't obviously sell them, right? So I think there has to be some kind of effort to make people more aware of what they have. And I think because they've been in place for so long, it's almost like they're kind of forgotten. Yeah.
And you've been doing this research so long. So you say 10 years. Are you working on multiple post office or what's happened in that span of time? Are you researching just the lineage of these and who painted what, or what is your research? What are all the moving parts? What do you keep working on? Is it more post offices or other subjects?
Well, I do some other subjects as well. I think what makes the two in Jeanette really fascinating is the man who designed the murals, Alexander Costolo, because he's a fascinating figure in the history of an industrial design, and that's not something that I specifically look at. And I've had the opportunity to meet his daughter, who lives in New York City, and he is someone, his is a name that keeps coming up, but a lot of people still don't have a lot of information on him. So I often think about, you know, what kind of contribution does learning about Alexander Costolo, what does that give? And I think he had a unique perspective on design and modern and contemporary art at that time. And it also led me to another industrial designer based in Mexico, who also was interested in him. And actually, Costolo's theories on design really inspired him to include that in his curriculum at the University of Guadalajara. So for me, it's just sort of like this path of how this one man, how his work spreads to so many different places. So for me, I think at this point, I've written about it in chunks, and I guess for me, I'm trying to figure out how to kind of bring all of that together into one cohesive piece. How this one commission from the 1930s still exists and sort of lives in different ways in Jeanette and people who research it from the point of view of an industrial design professor in Mexico. For me, I think that's really amazing.
That is amazing. And, I mean, it sounds like it should be a book, right, all your research?
Maybe. Maybe.
So let's talk about also what you're doing, of course, as manager of community engagement. Can you tell me a little bit about you're employed by Pittsburgh, right? This is the Greater Pittsburgh Arts Council that employs you?
Well, we fall under the Greater Pittsburgh Arts Council, but really the Office of Public Art, we are our own entity here in Pittsburgh, and we maintain a public-private partnership with the Greater Pittsburgh Arts Council and the Department of City Planning here in Pittsburgh, but we're our own entity, and we work on technical assistance for public art. So if people are interested in commissioning works and they don't know how to do that, they can hire us for technical assistance. And also we have educational programming, which is what I work on, to help educate the public and artists about how to make public art and to help people become more engaged with it.
So let's talk a little bit about that, because, I mean, talking about the murals in the post office is a kind of an interesting convergence of these two things.
It is.
As you were saying, some people come in there and they don't know what's going on. They don't know what it means. They don't know the historical figures that are there, what it represents, what the mural was designed to do. And so today, with contemporary artists, it's really very much the same issue, right? How do we make these murals or public art something that is part of people's lives, that engages them, that excites them, that somehow reaches them? Is this an issue of visual literacy that we have to teach, or you have to teach a community about how to understand or evaluate art on a kind of visual literacy level? Or is it about making the messages so narrative and that it's clear what's happening? Because, of course, as you know, so much of contemporary art isn't about spelling it all out and making a clear narrative that everybody understands. It's often something that's has more subtleties to it, and maybe about something that's not even narrative or so subjective.
That's a hard question to answer, but I think from just working with the public in this capacity, I think it's really just about giving people an entry point of some kind, just making them more aware and making them realize that this is something approachable. I don't know if you need to make people more aware of visual literacy, but letting them know that their opinion matters, that you don't have to have this extensive background in art to appreciate it or to comment on it, that you can approach it from many different ways, and that it's there for you to look at, to appreciate, to think about, and to experience. And I think the more you make things inclusive and are willing to bring a lot of people into that, I guess, to that world, I think maybe that's what helps people kind of get their first taste of what it can be and how they can approach things and think and learn.
And you're talking really about the audience now, not so much the artists or the people who are commissioning it. We're really just talking about public, the audience. Right?
The public, yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
And how do you know the public's engaged? I mean, on one hand, I think, of course we need more public engagement and that their opinion matters and how they feel about it matters. And at the same time, there's been all these controversies over sometimes local communities wanting certain sculptures taken down. I mean, I think of Richard Serra's, was it Tilted Ark in New York City? But, other times there's, maybe that should have been taken down. I don't know. I'm not advocating for it or not. But that there was this, I remember at that time there was all this argument over, these kind of things aren't meant for the public to decide what works or what doesn't. And maybe I'm straying from the issue here. I'm not sure, but I'm talking about like how the public interacts with it. Should it be to the extent that they have voice over whether it should exist or not? I mean, is that part of some of the thinking that your work is involved with?
Yeah, it actually is. I mean, obviously there's a lot of of public artwork in Pittsburgh that obviously has been here for a long time before the office was ever founded. But one thing that we really strive to do and that we've been working on is establishing artists in the public realm residencies, where we have been able to partner artists with community groups in areas of the city to come together, engage those communities, and create some kind of creative project together where everybody has a voice. And for us, that's really been our main goal, because we believe that people should have a voice in what's created and have some kind of public process to bring a creative endeavor to light. And it's been a really interesting process watching how people in these communities change and become engaged, and how artists experiment with how they approach projects and how they interact with people, and the range of what project means, of what public art means, because it doesn't necessarily just mean a sculpture or a monument. It can take on so many different forms of being a program that exists, or developing a curriculum for an organization that might not have the resources to do so, or they want to do something more creative. Or it can be an excursion. It could be an excursion somewhere. So we're open to all these different ideas of what public art can mean, and who has a say in making it.
I love that. So in some of the projects that you talked about, or artists working with the communities, it actually becomes a kind of collaboration and a research, right? The artists are researching the communities by talking to members of the communities, by having meetings, and then in a sense they're also collaborating with them about perhaps the narrative of the mural itself.
Yeah, and it doesn't have to. Yeah, of whatever the artwork is, and in our residencies so far have been 2-year endeavors, where the first year, an artist embeds themselves in that community by first just learning about people, who they are and what they're doing, and going to community meetings and sort of establishing a relationship based on trust. And then from there, working out what would be the need, or what would benefit this community. What kind of project can we make together that's not only aesthetically beautiful or what have you, but something that kind of fills a need in a way. And it's been a very interesting process to watch the ebb and flow of these projects.
So to tie that to what we talked about at the beginning, the New Deal murals, and I know I keep saying murals, but of course. It's sculpture and other things that you're working with. The New Deal murals seem to be almost close to what you're saying, right? I mean, the ones that I've seen, they are about the community that they're made in, and are somehow, creating a kind of a story, a narrative that would ideally give people a kind of pride of place. And it seems almost what you're doing with artists and communities has a parallel to that. Am I stretching that too much, or is that the case?
No, to be honest, you are stretching it to an extent, because the artists of that time were very limited. They could not paint or create a mural or sculpture or relief based on what they wanted. There were strict rules about what they could portray and how. And one of the arguments about these murals is that they lack real aesthetic quality, that they're boring, that they're homogenous. They obviously don't represent African Americans appropriately or Native Americans appropriately. And the artists weren't allowed to do that. And in a lot of ways, I think that if the artists from the Great Depression, from when they were making these murals, could have had an artist residency like we have now, where they were able to spend more time and really learn about the communities they were in and had a bit more freedom, then I think that they could have made murals that were way more engaging and way more authentic in a way, or something that people were really looking for. I'm not saying that all the murals from that time period are disingenuous, because some really are. Some really do not fit the narrative that everyone argues that all of the murals fit in, that they're just sort of bland. That's not true. Some artists were able to portray how they felt and were able to get across a more genuine story. But I think had they had more time and more freedom, then they would have been better. So yeah, in a way, you're right. I think that what we do here can definitely tie into that story or at least build on it in some way.
Well, I mean, I guess it's exciting the time we're in a sense. You know, in that there's people like you who are encouraging this kind of community engagement and representing different people on different levels, because it's not about forwarding the kind of ideal of a government or a state who wants to selectively portray history. That's
mm-hmm.
that's obviously something that you're not doing with current artists, right? They have more
yeah.
free rein. Or is there subjects that they can't go into or terrain that they shouldn't go into?
Well, I mean, we haven't really come across that a lot, speaking from the point of view of the residencies, because we're so mindful of that, and there are so many voices at the table that it's, I think because it's such an engaging process that we haven't really come up with, nobody's really presented anything to us that we're like, oh my gosh, you can't portray that. Because it's been vetted so many times by so many people. Obviously, are you going to make everybody happy at the end? I mean, will some people think, oh, what kind of project is this? I mean, sure, you're not going to make everybody happy, but the artwork that we've been working on as part of these residencies, it has not created any type of controversy or anything to that extent.
And is there anything you want, before I ask you some of the last questions, artists to know or curators to know about the residency and this project? Is it only for people of that are residents of Pittsburgh? What do artists or people who want to get involved in the residency or your program need to know?
Well, if you are interested in opportunities in Pittsburgh, what you can do is visit publicartpittsburgh.org, and you can check out our website to see any upcoming opportunities that we have. We also have the artist opportunities list, which you can find on our website, that is available to anybody who registers for that monthly email that my colleague curates. So there's a lot of opportunities here in Pittsburgh, and people should definitely check us out.
And those opportunities are for artists outside of Pittsburgh as well as within Pittsburgh?
It depends on the project. So we have a lot of both. We have some where they're looking for people here, and some we're looking for, you know, international, national, what have you.
Rachel, it's great talking to you about all these things.
Yeah,
I really love
you.
What you're doing. Before we go, I want to ask you what I ask everyone. What are you reading at the moment?
Right now, I am reading the Echo Anthology of International Poetry.
Rachel, I want to thank you for talking with me today. It's really been a pleasure.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.